coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics.
Welcome!
Now, here we go. I got a question about that, by the way. This is issue 289. I want to get that out now because I've been forgetting to put them out there. I am Andrew Farmer. Also, we are joined by what sounds like a passable Mark Hamill impression of the Joker.
Ooh, yes. Tonight. Passable at best.
Vampire! Vampire!
Jokers! Jokers!
This is, of course, Jedi Cole, and I feel like the clown from Spawn is to the left of me, and the Joker is to the right.
All right.
Right, I'm stuck in the middle with you, my friend.
Here's my thought on this, is this is a good... We are still pretty close to Halloween. We're, like, within a week of Halloween. I think the Joker is a good kind of... come down Halloween episode, because I feel like he fits really well into Halloween, and I don't know why I never put that together before, that while we were digging for like a Halloween issue, we should have done. So we're going to call this our second Halloween issue in continuity, because we haven't had an in continuity show in a while, so that's why I wanted to get that out there right away.
So it's kind of like Hobbiton. This is second Halloween.
This is second Halloween, which there
You've
should
never
be.
Never heard of second Halloween?
There should be a lot of Halloweens, and there aren't.
There should be like five a year.
There should be five Halloweens. So
because it would throw things off, there'd be no symmetry to it. Just five a year.
Very Joker-like, by the way. Yeah. That would be very Joker-like if there were five Halloweens.
Two of them are like consecutive months.
It's just weird. I was going to say, it's like March and April. It's not even... I feel like... I was thinking about this earlier, and this isn't my big thinking about it earlier moment, but Mark Hamill's Joker voice that he's done for what feels like millennia now, and it's... he is the epitomal Joker, right? Is not that far off from Frank Oz's Yoda voice.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that.
I wonder if that's when, like, it started to develop in his mind that I've got this voice. Not
this
necessarily
should be the...
from the Joker, but, you know, I can do this thing, and then the Joker kind of fell on his lap, and he said, yeah, absolutely, I can do it. And
that's
it's
right.
Gonna
I've been
imitating
Yoda for decades, so
like this, like it's not that far off if you actually.
That's so true.
Listen,
how relentless you are, Batman.
Right. Yes. Like that's. It's not. It's the tonal quality to it and the pitch that's very similar. Mm. It's a real interesting Joker voice that I don't think anybody ever. I mean, it borrows a little bit from Cesar Romero. Doesn't. Borrow a whole lot from Nicholson.
It, in a way, it takes a little bit from that kind of back of the throat cartoon Joker voice that preceded. The kind of Frank Oz, Fozzie Bear.
Did
Rick
you just do a Rick impression?
I don't know. I can't
show.
Do the voice off the top of my head. I'd have to go back and get some reference, but it seems like it had kind of a...
But yes, so tonight, what is tonight's issue? I know we've kind of danced around it a little bit.
Oh, yes. This tonight is, was this 389? Or 289? 289, I guess we can't have a 389.
It is certainly not 389.
Yeah. But this is I Started a Joke.
I like it. It's a great title. I like the concept. We have talked about the Joker not as much as Batman, but I would say probably it's gotten more screen time. Joker's gotten more screen time than just about any other villain that we've talked about.
Joker's probably had the most mileage.
Yeah, I think Joker's gotten the most out of this show. we've had an entire show on the psychology of the Joker. We've had an entire show on the conception Not well. Yeah, actually, the conception of the Joker. That's a fair assessment. But you know, we've never really talked about the Joker's finer moments and just what it is to be the Joker. And I have a theory. Would you like to hear my theory up top?
I would love to hear your theory,
because I think it defines the episode a little bit. And that is, we often look at the Flash as the catalyst for
the wrong Flash.
You went and saw.
I saw Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, it's bleeding through. We look at the Flash as the catalyst for crises in the DC universe. But every time that there's a major crisis, and I'm not talking about the minor ones, the major crises, your Crisis on Infinite Earths, your Infinite Crisis, your Flashpoints and your Rebirths, those type of things, which are the ones I really thought about, coming out of the other side, you get a Superman who is still Superman.
Yeah.
He might have pants on. He might not have pants on. I don't. The costuming aside, you get Superman that is a Superman. You get, you know, sacrosanct Batman who is Batman. You didn't come out of Crisis on Infinite Earths with Batman wielding a machine gun and a katana. You still got Batman.
Yes.
You know, you got a Green Lantern who is Green Lantern. You got a Flash who is still the Flash in the Flash is, and a Wonder Woman who's still Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
All of your characters, all your key characters are still the same from place to place. The origin might change a little, and you know, the costume might change, but at the very the motive and the method are still the same. But with the Joker, every time you come out of a crisis, you get a different Joker. The Joker's still got the same motive, but he's telling a story differently in every crisis. Interesting, because, and they still haven't launched it yet, but there's that Three Joker story that they're bandying about. And the cover art is three different Jokers from three different time periods that fall in between three different crises. My theory is that if anybody is wily enough to escape a multiversal crunch, especially in Crisis on Infinite Earths, because a whole bunch of people made it out of that in one piece. But, you know, it's the Joker. If anybody can figure out how to make the crisis work for them, it's the Joker. So now we got three Jokers from three different crises that have been hiding out. and now I think we're going to get that reveal.
Well, it's the perfect catalyst for a new Joker, because during the Crisis on Infinite Earths, for example, the perpetual prison grays, Lex Luthor,
right,
joins forces with the bald-headed, armored Lex Luthor.
Correct.
And ultimately, the more familiar, the contemporary Lex Luthor, pretty much just vaporizes him.
Just owns him, right.
Yeah, it's just like there can be only one. But I could see that almost like we never knew there were Jokers on Infinite Earths.
That's a crossover I want to see. That is absolutely something I would pay good money to read, is the Jokers on Infinite Earths.
Exactly.
That would be great. So what was the idea behind – I know I kind of ran – roughshod over this thing, but what was the idea behind the show? Because you came up with the concept. You came up with the concept in short order and kind of bumped it up the track a little bit. So where do you want to go with this?
Yeah, I think, well, one of the things I really wanted to do with this was sort of take a look at the Joker in a different way than we ever have before. And it sort of morphed and melded and became part of the idea becomes these multiple Joker incarnations.
Sure.
From, you know, over a great many decades, for, you know, the character's been around for over three quarters of a century.
That's a long time.
You know, that is some longevity for a character that could easily be a one-hit wonder. And the fact that someone is always out to, you know, create new ways to explore the possibilities of the Joker.
Yeah.
And you know, make a determination on how do we revise the character? How do we make the character new and different and ultimately interesting and topical to new generations?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, you had your beginning Joker, and it was 1939, by the way. 1939. So 80 years almost of the Joker. That's an insane run. Insane run. But how did the Joker start? The Joker kind of started, it wasn't the Joker that we know now.
Exactly.
And I think that's the point, is like the Batman that you got then, short of the short period of time when he ran around with a gun and purple gloves and popped off on people, threw people off of buildings. And, you know, it's been the Batman has been the Batman, and the Joker has gone through these bizarre evolutions of psychology and motive, you know, up to the point where we have him now, which is just like this serial killer who cuts faces off of people.
This is not your grandfather's Joker.
Right, your grandfather's Joker was interested in one thing and one thing only. Well, first of all, he didn't like Batman anyway.
Yeah.
But he really was into just kind of making that green, making that money. Like, that's how the Joker started, was just robbing shit.
Well, the thing about it is, the Joker, I mean, to go from robbing to, you know, robbing people to robbing killer.
well played.
But the thing about it is, you have the Joker, the character, what's really kind of unique is, for every character that is in the early Batman mythos, the early Rogues Gallery, I should say, all of them have a, you know, they've all got a name. Like the Weeping Willow and the Croaking Toad, they have a name, but...
God damn it. Taking me down the highway.
Taking me down the highway.
That was good.
But they, the Joker is the only character that, for whatever reason, was never given a definitive character name. It was like, for whatever reason, a determination was made that he'd just sort of be shrouded in mystery.
Right.
And that prevailed, you know, right up through like the Killing Joke, which sort of hinted at a bit of history, but certainly Moore was respectful to not give the character. It didn't have to be a Jack Napier. We didn't have to have a name. He doesn't, and in many ways, the Dark Knight Joker is more true to the Joker because nobody knows who he is.
But isn't it a factor of the time period? Because we look at everything now as super serialized. You know, the overarching umbrella plots of everything has to be tied to something. Everything has to mean something.
Yeah.
In the 40s and the 50s, while there were a lot of people that had a name to humanize them to the audience, I think, it wasn't necessary because you weren't telling a serialized story that was going to last. We've talked about this. Nobody thought these things were going to last 80 years. Nobody in a million years when Robinson and Finger and Kane decided that the Joker was a thing thought, well, 80 years from now, this is what the Joker's supposed to be. It was like, here's a character we can use every once in a while that's, you know, goofy and weird and seems like a good foil, you know?
Well, it's exactly what Batman needs in a villain.
Right.
Because he is, you know, in many ways a counterpoint. He becomes the opposite, the insanity to Batman's relative sanity. But the thing about it is, if you look at it, you had Oswald Cobblepot, the Edward Nigma, who, you know, you couldn't see that one coming. you have all of these characters that are thrown at Batman one after another, and only one of them was determined to be nameless. And so I think that that's one of the things that really fascinates me about the Joker, is that he's literally the, you know, you're talking about how he was really into just the green there, you know, it's the fistful of dollars, man with no name.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you have this character who, you know, just starts out, because if you look at the history of this nameless character, he was all about the green. That's how he becomes the Joker in the first place.
That's true.
He's trying to rob the playing card factory that happens to be next to the deadly chemical waste plant. Pass the savings on to you.
Isn't that always the way?
Oh, yeah. Well, they fought the, you know, there was a lot of outcry, and they really tried to fight it, but, you know, you can't fight City Hall. The deal was done, and the playing card factory went in. The chemical people did not want a playing card factory next to them.
Well, the writing's on the wall when you put up a playing card factory next to you. Something.
Yeah.
If you want unsavory characters, open a playing card factory. That's what I always say.
Well, and, you know, if you want to just invite criminal activity, nothing's more attractive to your gangster, to your, you know, break-in, grab-and-run gangster than, of course, playing card factories, which are just, you know, there's tons of money laying around at all times.
I mean, hand over fist. What do you do with all that money?
There's so much money because all of their clientele pay in cash.
Yes.
Of course.
Well, they all here's the problem, Cole, is you want to make a deal. Let's say you're Joe Schmo's magic shop, right, in Gotham's Riverside District, and you need to buy a bunch of playing cards, decks of playing cards. So you go over to the playing card factory, and you say, I need a regularly occurring shipment of a case of playing cards every month on the 3rd. And they say, all right, two options. You either give me X amount of money, and we'll go ahead and do that, normal, you know, standard goods for services type of deal, or we play five-card stud.
Oh, that's how it goes.
Yeah. So many people are losing money against the playing card factory, because you have to gamble for your deal.
Well, that, and, you know, who's going to be better at card games than playing card manufacturers? I mean, it's just a given.
I'm telling you.
They work with them every day.
They literally stack the deck thousands of times a day.
Plus, they know exactly how many cards there are in a deck.
Is this your card? Not yet. You haven't beat me at five card stud.
That's right.
It's fantastic. We have talked for 10 minutes about playing card factories.
That's right. Only on this show. But, you know, it stands to reason that the character remains very much true to his origins.
Right.
And that he's just a standard criminal. And then as time goes on, you get a lot more writers who are wanting to expand on what this character is all about. And then he becomes, you know, there's this kind of deadly earnest that gets worked into the mix.
Well, it's, yeah, because you're right about writers, right? I mean, even through the 70s, when you had like Englehart and, you know, Denny O'Neill and Neil Adams and all those guys working on Batman and the Joker, right? You still had a Joker that ran around with fish with clowns painted on their faces and, you know, pulling up bank heists. And by this point, you had gotten the rivalry between the Joker and the Batman, you know, but it wasn't what it was going to become. And what it was going to become is exactly what you expect something to become when you say, hey, Alan Moore, here's the Joker, do something with him. Because that's when you get things like The Killing Joke.
Exactly.
Your goddamn Killing Joke. That's when things take dark turn. Death in the
Family. But even before the Killing Joke, and even before Death in the Family, if you look at, speaking of Crisis on Infinite Earths, Joker's entree into that story is a murder. You see this guy, you know, this dead movie mogul on the ground with his face, you know, pulled back into a rictus of a big grim smile, and Joker standing him over him with a pistol, and talking about how he should have signed over the movie rights to these classic comedies that he wanted. And then here comes Batman, too late, crashing in to stop him, and then they both get interrupted by the specter of the Flash sometime in the near future.
But isn't that self-defense? I mean, you are dealing with the Joker at this point. Like, it feels like a personal attack if you won't give him the rights to the classic comedies.
That's true.
I'm not defending the... Okay, I'm defending the Joker. That's fine. I've gone at length about...
I have a feeling it won't be the last time.
The Joker is the Dr. Otto Octavius of the DC universe for me. In some weird way, I think, all right, I'm into this guy. Like, but yeah, that... But, well, I mean, nobody... Yeah, okay. Fair enough, Cole. You make a valid point. I don't think that the Joker ever shied away from murder.
Yeah.
In the sense of, I'm a criminal, and I murder people as a means to an end.
Yeah, I don't think he necessarily started out as the type who just as soon kill you as go fishing, but more the type who would, in the commission of the crime, might... be forced to kill you.
Right. Exactly. Like, it's strong arm stuff. It's mafia stuff. Give me my money. You won't pay me off. It'd be a shame if something happened to your legs because they look nice.
Yeah.
Okay, you're not going to do that. Well, instead of breaking your legs, I'm going to make you laugh your liver out of your eye, and then it'll probably shoot you with a gun that's just as likely to have a flag that says bang as an actual bullet. But things get real dark, though, in the late 80s. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it gets real dark after Crisis. Am I wrong in that? Because it was 82, right?
Yeah. 82 I think, yeah, post-Crisis. And the thing about it is, I really have to spitball a lot on that because I wasn't following Batman that closely. So, we could be way off the mark. But certainly after Crisis... Because it was after Crisis that you then get things like, what am I wanting to say here? Like, you get The Dark Knight Returns. You get Watchmen. And the dynamic suddenly shifts.
Right.
And everybody's darker.
But nobody went darker more quickly, I feel like, as an established character than the Joker. Because you had the Joker who, like we said, in the commission of a crime was willing to murder somebody, right? But never went out of his way to, let's say, kidnap a boy and take him into the desert and strap him to a bomb and almost beat him to death with a crowbar. Or shoot somebody in the back or in the front, depending. In order, not in the commission of a crime, but in order to get at a superhero. Or... You know, those are the things that happened after Crisis. After you let Alan Moore attach himself to a character and reinvent it, and then release it into the wild to let it evolve. And it gets much darker at that point. But but even that Joker pales in comparison because it's still a goofy Joker.
Yeah.
It's just, that's almost worse. A weird goofo Joker running around with like a lapel pin flower that shoots acid is worse than, I guess, sort of worse than the sociopathy in like the New 52 Joker setting giant elaborate like legitimate death traps with dead cops and
No, absolutely. I think that the Joker that finds humor in burning your face off with his
Right, exactly.
With its posy, that, you know, somehow engineers these spindly killer fish with Joker faces that, you know, that were, you know, I think the title, The Killing Joke, was more apt than perhaps we realized, because at that stage, the Joker was making murder a joke. It was just all in fun for him.
Right. Yeah. But was it, or was it a test? And I think this is the Joker that starts testing the Batman.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to test your resolve to see if you are the man you say you are, and if you are just that one bad day away from snapping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and losing it. You know, and then you get an evolution into, after that crisis, that Joker rides the wave for a while, but then you have the Infinite Crisis, you know, as a sequel to Crisis on Infinite Earths, and as a sequel to the evolution of the Joker, you end up with just this, like, real sociopathic Joker at that point. Just kind of insane, beyond insane Joker, you know, that is super into, like murder, like serial killer Joker, like somewhere between, you know, Victor Zsasz and someone else, that you get this, like, real insane Joker that starts, like, cutting people's faces off, and it's no longer a game. I guess, but it is, like, it's just really, I don't know, it's just really interesting to me at that point.
Well, also, if you know, allow for continuity.
Yes, which we have to.
If there's a level of continuity as a given, the Joker becomes, in many ways, the sum of his experiences. So the worse the Joker becomes, the more perhaps he craves to be, you know, he's actually in this spiral of having to one-up himself. And then what does it do to the Joker to steal most of Mr. Mix's little Lick's power in the, Emperor Joker storyline? Where Joker suddenly has infinite power, reorders the entire universe to his own twisted liking.
Right. And I wasn't familiar with that story. So that one is beyond my period of time.
Yeah, it's you know, it's taking it away from the you know, deadly joy buzzers and the razor sharp playing cards to a level where, you know, the Justice League is Bizarro and other,
right,
and an infinite variety of powers to, you know, do anything he desires, and ultimately has to be taken back down to regular Joker.
Yeah, you have to step that down to regular Joker, and then, you know, it carries on from there up to where we are currently, and I'm cutting a bunch of it off, because there's a lot of stuff that we want to get to in this episode, in this issue, but it's interesting to see an evolution where the motive has evolved, but it's still basically, the motive has been the same longer than the method has. Let's put it that way. The motive has been, since he stopped being in it for the money,
yeah,
and started being in it for the Batman,
mm-hmm,
the method has changed much more than the motive has. But I wanted to get to some of the other stuff that's Joker related, because I know that we all have some favorite Joker moments that we haven't really had a chance to talk about. So, Cole, what are some of your favorite Joker moments?
Wow.
Yeah.
I think my favorites tend to be the ones where the Joker, just because he is the Joker, is holding his own among some of the most powerful beings in the universe.
Right.
You know, there are Superman and Batman and other villains who are heavy hitters. And somehow Joker can insinuate himself into the mix at will. And I think he's just too crazy to know better.
But isn't that the Batman of, you know, Batman can hold his own against Darkseid. Joker can hold his own against Superman.
He's sort of the Batman of evil, because he, even though he has no powers to speak of, everybody wants him on the team.
Or doesn't.
Yeah. But they don't have a say in it.
Well, what was the... It was in... That's one of my favorite Joker moments. And we have discussed this moment and how great it is. And I think it was in Justice. I think it was in DC's seminal three-part homage to the superpowers, Justice, in which the Joker... The idea of Justice, if you haven't heard us talk about it, and I know we have and it's been in recommended reading, is the villains topple the hierarchy of the superhero with the promise of being able to fix all the ills of the world if they just band together and do it. In the meantime, in the background, they are of course just wreaking havoc on the superhero community and doing all kinds of nefarious deeds behind the green curtain or the green door. If you're a porn fan. But there's a scene where Joker's not really involved in any of this because he's too much of a wild card. And do you remember the scene I'm talking about where they will not let Joker play in their reindeer games and Joker gets super upset about it, and he shows up at, like, they're boom tubing or sending people to a utopian society, and the Joker wants to be a part of it, and it's all a Joker's old, you know, Injustice gang buddies that are doing it, that are engaged in it, and he shows up as what appears to be, like, in the costume, and Alex Ross just, this is, you know, we say that there's a good Alex Ross and a bad Alex Ross, this is the good Alex Ross work.
Yeah.
But he shows up to this thing in, what appears to be, like, I don't want to throw shade here, but what I would an Amish outfit with, like, the kind of, it's all black, it's way somber for him, but it's very much a, like long white bow tie and then the black suit and the Amish beard.
Trying to appear as contrite as possible.
Yes, and he insinuates himself into their plans because they will not let him as sort of this messiah figure, and they're just like, shit, well, now we've gotta
do something with him.
Now we gotta let him play in our reindeer games because he knows now. Like, and I think that's the part, is, like, there's so much that they try to keep from him because he's such a wild card, because you don't know what he's going to do, and as soon as you let him into your game, he's going to take the game over.
Yes.
And I think that's the joke of the Joker in and of himself.
Exactly, and he's just completely unabashed in all of these.
That's very true. That's very, very true. So what are some others? I know you've got them. I know you've got a ton of them.
Well, I think perhaps one of the most striking and I believe oft forgotten in its, you know, oft overlooked in its brilliance is the in The Killing Joke at the end, where I think, though the Joker is ultimately defeated twice within the context of that narrative, he succeeds.
He won.
Yeah, in that he partially destroys Barbara Gordon.
Sure.
By leaving her paralyzed, and probably at least has some, not nowhere near the full effect he wanted on Commissioner Gordon. But, you know, that's still going to be a burdensome thing for him to carry.
Right.
But then, where I think he succeeds most is at the very end, and it's so subtle, is that he makes the Batman laugh.
Which is all he ever wanted to do.
Exactly. And I think that fits very much into the title of this episode.
Yes.
As well. But the fact that he can actually get a bit of a chuckle out of Batman is one of those things that really, you know, puts the chills in your spine, as it were.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it is, it's portrayed so beautifully because it's just almost off panel. And it's just like, and it's just like, shit, that's creepy. All right.
Yeah. That he finally got in at least that much.
It's awesome. It's great. It really is great.
And I think one of my other just big Joker moments that I have to touch on is when he's executed by Magog.
Oh, in Kingdom Come?
Kingdom Come. And what I think is especially brilliant, and this is good Alex Ross, is the way the Joker looks in Kingdom Come. Because he is balding.
Yeah.
So you have this wonderful, you know, pasty flesh and these just little wisps and whorls of his green hair that remain.
Yes.
And I thought that is a really clever take on aging a character.
It's good. Like, man, there's so many great Joker stories to tell. And you know, I want to talk here about White Knight, which is a recent Joker telling. And it's part of that Black Label series that they're doing,
yes,
which is the Three Jokers series, which is the Batman Constantine and Batman's Wang three-hander that they're doing. It's so good because the plot is, and I think we touched on it a little bit before, but Batman corners the Joker in a pharmaceuticals warehouse. So it's very reminiscent of the birth of the Joker.
Yes.
And ends up kind of going, Batman by this point, this is a little bit in the future, has gone off the rails violently, closer to, let's say, an all-star Batman, beats Yikes. The living crap out of him. Mm-hmm. And the Joker says something to the effect of, like, the medicine that he's in, whatever it is, would make him do better than – make him a better man than Batman is. And then Batman, like, makes him take a bunch of the pills just, like, in a fit of rage, like, just opens his mouth and pours them in there. And then they capture him, but somehow the Joker is cured. Like, a month later, the Joker is cured. He doesn't have the white face anymore. He doesn't have any of that. He's fine. He's good. They let him out. He passes all of his tests. They let him out of Arkham. He moves into the the Narrows and starts, like, cleaning up the Narrows and running for office and trying to make it a better place. In the meantime, in the background, you learn that the Joker has stolen some of the Mad Hatter's mind control technology, infused it into Clayface, and then basically injected Clayface into the bloodstream of all of these supervillains, effectively making them all susceptible to the mind control powers. Your comic science, what are you going to do?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he's using that as leverage. You know, he'll cause crimes and then be able to superhero stop the crimes, but with working with the police, he's able to, you know, talk them down. And, you know, I was the Joker, you can reform, and they all listen to him because he's got him under mind control. But, you know, and he goes about trying to show everybody that Batman is the real villain. This is what Batman did to me, and this is what Batman does. You know, you don't need a Batman. Batman needs to work with the GCPD, like, all this stuff. But what's really interesting is, as you get to the end, it was the medicine doing it. It is legitimate, but the medicine wears off, or starts to wear off. And the old Joker Jekyll and hides his way out at times. Like he'll pop out and then recede back in. So the other cool concept of this is that there's two Harley Quinns. There's the original Mr. J Harley Quinn in the jumpsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a second Harley Quinn, which Neo Harley Quinn is what they end up calling her, which is like the real weird Suicide Squad Harley Quinn that doesn't seem to line up with the Harley Quinn that existed before.
Yeah.
You know, because there is that. Well, Harley Quinn basically, you know, wants the Joker to be the Joker, and basically Joker's the Joker the way Joker would Joker the Batman. To the point where he has to say, I'm letting the Joker out. It's the only way to beat her. I understand that you're going to put me back in Arkham. And I understand that this is, you know, that I'm going to become the thing that hunts you again and makes you crazy. And we are the, you know, that you have to become Batman again and I have to become Joker again. But it's the only way to stop her from, you know, destroying Gotham.
Yeah.
But it's a really interesting take on the Joker. And it mirrors a lot of what we're seeing on social about what truth is and what reality is in the way that that story is told.
Aha, very nice. That was unfortunately not one that I've actually read, but it's fascinating.
Well,
stuff. Brand
spanking new. Like,
yeah, there you go.
Like, and I was lucky to have gotten my hands on it and read it, and I was kind of trepidatious about getting into it, but I'm really glad I did. And I think that's it's a good segue into kind of where I wanted to go to close out the show, if it's okay with you,
I think I can live with that.
Is to talk about the Elseworlds appearances of Joker for a little while, or at least the Jokers that appear that aren't our mainstream Jokers. So we touched on the Kingdom Come Joker.
Yeah.
And this Joker, which, while not, I really wish they would have continued, much like we talked about during the What If issues, I wish they would have continued the Elseworlds line instead of instead of deciding just to muck about in the continuity as much as they have. But do you have any favorites from the, you know, either the Elseworlds or the alternate reality or the stuff that just doesn't exist anymore, Jokers?
Wow. I'm racking my brain on the Elseworlds Jokers, because a lot of the Elseworlds stuff I pursued wasn't always Batman-related.
Sure.
It tends to be outside the mainstream. Batman is, or the Joker is remanded to strictly Batman.
Yeah, and there's some, there, so I'm trying to find it, and I know I have it on the old library shelves over here, but there was an Elseworlds that I got my hands on, and it was a medieval retelling. There have been a few of them in the Elseworlds categories, where it's like a medieval retelling of certain stories. Like, the one I was able to put my hands on was one called the JLA Riddle of the Beast, that's basically Robin, Dick Grayson, sort of a Hobbit's tale of Dick Grayson going on his hero's journey and kind of forming the Justice League, where Hawkman is an actual Hawkman and Green Arrow is a kind of a Beastman Ranger type, and Aquaman is actually half fish. He's basically a merman, and Batman is a barbarian, you know, cloaked in a bat's, you know, a giant bat cowl, and of course.
Okay, I think I've seen that version of Batman somewhere before.
And it is high fantasy, so Etrigan is featured pretty prominently in it. But there is an appearance by the Joker, if only to tell the story of the Batman and his fall from grace. In this book, but that's the only way. And he's basically a traveling storyteller of sorts. But there's another one that I cannot for the life of me find right now, where the Joker appears as a dragon.
Huh.
And I want more than anything to find that
Yeah,
and it's on. That's... It's somewhere, and I'll report back at a later show. But it's somewhere on the bookshelf that I need to find. But the Joker has had many an appearance in the Elseworlds world, such as when. Are you familiar with?
And that's a dragon, not to be confused with Dagon from our Halloween special.
Correct. Even though. I will say this, we got dangerously close to a Joker Dagon crossover in the there is an Elseworlds Batman story called The Doom That Came to Gotham, which is based in the 20s, and it's Batman meets the Cthulhu mythos.
Ah, yes.
And it is fan-damn-tastic, and Mike Mingola's involved, and it's just great. If you haven't read it, that's one of the books that you can find that was just like, this is perfect, you know, because he's Batman and he's fighting the Cthulhu cult. Like, it's right up. It hits the points. But in Batman in Darkest Night, what you'll find in a lot of these is like Batman Speeding Bullet, Batman Darkest Night, where the Joker basically morphs with whatever the villain is in that other book. Like, for instance, there's a weird Sinestro Joker hybrid in Darkest Night, where Batman gets the Green Lantern ring, and his villain is a Sinestro Joker hybrid, which is I of course have that comic because and by the way, I really wish his name was Green Batman Lantern, but it's not. I just want to put that, yeah. And then in Speeding Bullet, it's a hybrid of the Joker and Lex Luthor.
But okay.
The two that really stand out for me is, do you remember the annuals, the Elseworld annuals they did?
Oh, yes.
The Batman, I don't know, did you ever read the Batman Elseworlds, that annual where he was Leatherwing the Pirate?
I don't think I've read that one, but I'm kind of familiar because there was a Joker pirate of some
yes,
kind.
Yes, that's where I was going. Yes. the pirate Captain Joker, otherwise known as the Laughing Man, was a privateer where you know, Batman was basically like a member of the what were the British before there was a navy, there were the conscripted ships. I forget the name of
oh, like the yes, where you could like have letters of mark or something like that.
Correct. And you would go out and you know, basically run down the pirates, and whatever you got from the pirates was still pretty much yours, but you were in high standing. And that was the story. And of course the Joker is told to be malformed, you know, he has the Joker face and the green hair, and But he's wearing the Jerry Seinfeld puffy shirts and the giant hook. He looks like Dustin Hoffman and Hook combined with the Joker. And it's a pretty great story. It fits itself very well into kind of the Joker mythos. And the other one that immediately pops into my old brain pan is which one is it? Is it – yeah, it's Bloodstorm. One of the Batman Dracula see, we're going right back to it. One of the Batman Dracula Elseworlds, where the Joker becomes a vampire and
teeth as sharp as new barbed wire.
Yeah, vampire. We can't say vampire without saying vampire five times now.
That's right. Thank you, Tom Lennon.
But he, but the Joker basically like turns all the crime families in Gotham into vampires. And runs herd on them, and he's a very effectively creepy vampire. And those are the two that really jump out. And if I could find the one where he was a dragon, it was actually pretty fantastic. I think that the great thing about the Joker is that the psychopathy of the Joker, you could tell any story and drop the Joker into it, and the craziness of the Joker makes sense in whatever story you're trying to tell.
So true.
Yeah. So did you come up with any Elseworlds off the top of your head, or are you still flummoxed?
No, you're pretty much more steeped in the Joker's Elseworlds.
I like
but
that
I think
crap.
you if you can't talk about the history and the mystery of the Joker in this context without mentioning at least the Joker in The Killing Joke.
Oh yes, this is a good way to round this out because it's about that time. So bring us
exactly
home.
And that's the one where you know you have the effectively or supposedly cured Joker.
Okay. Yes.
Who? I think what's interesting about this, and I don't think I really made the connection at full.
Okay.
Back in the day. But what's interesting is the complete lack of the traditional Joker color palette with the Dark Knight Joker, in that you have the Joker who's cured and he's dressed all in white. He's basically gone and shopped at Fisk's.
I like the idea that there's a place called Fisk's where I go buy a white
it's all you want is white suits. You want to go to Fisk's because they've got the best white.
I mean, they did a really. Have you watched
any
of
Stain Resistant? By the way,
have you watched any of the third season of Daredevil?
I am about 3 episodes in.
Has he donned the white suit yet?
Yes.
But that suit is so shiny. Like, I never imagined in the comic that the suit was going to be, like, super shiny. And I'm like, well, that's an interesting take.
But, yeah, you have to look at the – I think it was an interesting – and, again, I often look at things like, are they by accident or design? Which is one of my favorite turns of phrase I picked up somewhere along the lines. And in that regard, I mean that you have was it deliberate to suggest that, you know, the all-white is he's been expunged of all of the Jokerness except for his green hair and his red lips? Or was it just, you know, an off-the-cuff sort of design choice that really had no major significance? You know, I don't know that we'd ever be able to figure that out.
I think that we can probably extrapolate that it was, for the most part, I think we could probably say, yeah, it was an on-purpose move. Like, I don't think a lot was done in that book if it didn't mean something.
That's true.
If I had to wager some sort of guess, I would say it was probably 99% of what we saw was done on purpose.
Well, that, and you look at how shrewd Frank Miller is as a creator.
Right.
You can't help but see that that has to be where that was going.
Right. I completely agree with that. 100% agree with that.
But those are the two old Jokers, I think, that were most effectively done, and not that there have been a ton of them, but I think that a couple of really clever takes on Joker, an aged Joker, has been the Kingdom Come and the Dark Knight.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. All right. Well, I think that we've told the joke, and I hope people found the joke, if not funny, interesting.
Well, and the punchline came from a boxing glove on an extending trigger mechanism.
That's the only way it can. That's the only way it can.
Kind of a spring-loaded apparatus there.
So why don't you plug us up, and we will get out of here. We are doing everything in our power to get, I guess, back on track, as it were. And so we're going to promise... I'm going to promise that we're going to get as much as we can out as fast as we can to get back on track. So,
yes, and we, unfortunately, because of the necessity, and I really think it was a necessity that we took some time away from the show. But, you know, owing to that, we have our 300th episode, or the 300th issue, won't happen until 2019.
Unless we can really
unless we just really do like two-a-days or something. But I think that that's a sports term.
It's a, it is a sports term. you made a sports term.
Look at that. Which is good, because one of our upcoming episodes before 300, Eddie Medina will be joining us for Play Ball or Comic Sports Balls 3.
Can you believe we're doing the third Comic Sports Balls, Super Sports Balls?
Super Sports Balls.
We suck.
Super Comic Sports Balls.
We suck.
I mean, there's so many. We have not touched Super Lacrosse. We haven't.
And as we've stated earlier, Eddie is certified in Super Sports Ball now. So he has to be able to talk about this.
So we have to celebrate his new career. And we're coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at JCUMail@Yahoo.com. We're on Twitters and Instagrams and stuff. Andy can help me out with that one.
Oh, we're at HK Comic Show pretty much across the board. So if you just search for HK Comic Show, we're going to show up on all of the things.
And, of course, look for myself and Eddie Medina on the first and third Sundays of every month at DallasOnAir.com from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central for the Randcore Pit Live, and me on the third Sundays of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central for Isle of Toys.
Hell yeah. Do we know what guest you're going to be bringing to the table for Isle of Toys yet?
I'm hoping I can finally get a very elusive guest who is a collector, aficionado, fan, a bit of a historian, and occasional seller of some of the most bizarre toy lines. Favorite focus is the toys you would find, like, at the grocery store. Or on that, you know, one section of, you know, like Forgotten Worlds or something like that.
Hidden Worlds. Yes. The name of,
the knockoff type of G.I. Joe wannabes, yes. The Star Wars wannabes, the fantasy sword and sorcery wannabes that were fairly prevalent and now are kind of a lost segment of toys.
I really am interested in this. Like, I wish I was in Texas so I could sit in on this show.
Oh, it's amazing, because I've met him through several toy shows, especially those put on by the DFW G.I. Joe collectors group. And it's fascinating to see some of the things. Plus, he also has these toy lines you forgot about, like Rambo and Chuck Norris Karate Commandos, A-Team.
I've often been in, like,
For God's sake,
cross yourselves, Toys R Us, and you know, your various toy stores, and you go down the aisle that has those,
yeah,
like the big, and they're like big dragons, and they're pretty well articulated, and some of the stuff looks really cool, and I'm like, what? Where is this? Like, what is
my favorite? I actually bought one from the Toyminator, who I think bought it from this same guy. Was a hard rubber hollow rhinoceros with a Battle Cat style saddle zip tied to it.
Nice.
And this was how this thing was marketed.
Yes. Yes.
And it's blue.
Nice.
But otherwise, it was probably marketed years before simply as a rhinoceros. Imperial, who used to do like the knockoff Godzillas and the dinosaurs and animals and dragons and stuff. And they just repurpose things like two-headed dragons into this toy line.
Yeah, because there are like a ton of like semi-hard rubber, you know, that vinyl two-headed dragons, like with frills,
exactly, so.
No arms, like, and then you get like all the different, like they have like warriors and knights and rangers and like
and weird little Impossible Man of pop-up knockoff guys and
yeah. It's awesome. All right, I'm excited. I'm excited for that.
So I'm hoping I can get him his schedule to date. He's chomping at the bit to be on the show, but the Sundays never seem to correspond with his Sundays where he's not working. I'm hoping that this time that'll happen. If the stars don't align, I am also delving into finding a Hot Wheels guest, because we haven't done Hot Wheels yet.
That's a good one, too. I'm into that. All right. We'll let these people get back to their. They're going to get a lot of us in the next 3 months.
That's right.
2 months. So, buy, collect, enjoy your comics. I hope that everyone comes to appreciate the Joker the same way that I do, which is as a hero, as a hero among men, the anti-Batman in the truest fashion, like Cole said, a man that can stand up to your Superman and your new gods the same way that Superman and Batman can stand up to Apocalypse and no, Darkseid. I always get it wrong. I wish that Apocalypse in the Marvel Universe lived on Darkseid. That would make a whole lot better for me. all right, Cole, say goodnight.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you next week on Hey Kids Comics.